This is the Breaker.News podcast for February 25th, 2018. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker and receive a free copy of my ebook, Red Mittens and Red Ink, the Vancouver Olympics. On this edition, regular features such as the Is It Just Me commentary, Around the Rim, headlines from around the Olympics, the big deal feature, the politics of the Olympics, where does the five-ring circus go after the Pyeongchang Games, an interview with professor and author Jules Boykoff, and the Breaker will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those who made a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or do you wish that the International Olympic Committee would get its act together once and for all? The Pyeongchang 2018 Winter Olympics are over, and if not for the time difference, many more Canadians and many more Americans would have enjoyed the spectacle on their TVs and on their mobile phones. The world needs to come together every once in a while in pursuit of friendly competition. But the Olympics have become overshadowed by politics and economics wherever they go. It's a spectacle that has become too big and too costly. Few cities want to host the games anymore. Sponsors are even having second thoughts. Last year, McDonald's quit. And if you can see a can or a bottle of Coca-Cola in a store anywhere in British Columbia with Pyeongchang's logo or even the Olympic rings, please send me a photo. The European men who control the Olympic industry, it is an industry, need only look at what happened to FIFA to see where they're going. It's not too late for them to change. It's not too late to end corruption and end cronyism. It's not too late for them to become as transparent as they demand the athletes to be. But that's easier said than done. The next Winter Olympics in 2022 will be in China, a country that promised to become more open when it hosted the 2008 Summer Games. Instead, Beijing accelerated its goal to become the world's third superpower. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim, the special Olympic edition of Around the Rim, where we look at news headlines about Pyeongchang 2018. First, in South Korea's Yonhap News Service, Ju Kyung-dan reports, father of Swiss skier travels 17,000 kilometers on a bike to see his son in Pyeongchang. Guido Heuweiler traveled 17,000 kilometers on a bike to see his son's performance in South Korea. Guido and his wife Rita Rudeman started their bike tour in March 2017 in Switzerland to see Misha Gasser, a Swiss athlete who competed in the men's aerials at the 23rd Winter Games in Pyeongchang. The family finally met up at Phoenix Snow Park, the venue for freestyle skiing and snowboarding events at the Pyeongchang Games. Guido said, "I'm happy to see my son and we made it. It was fantastic." Guido and Rita went through 20 countries by bike to arrive in Pyeongchang. They did take an airplane during their trip, though, due to border control issues. Gasser finished in 11th place. In the Japan Times, a report from the Associated Press on the eve of the Games' closing ceremony, North Koreans were still waiting to see their first event. The virtual blackout is a telling contrast with how North Korea's made-for-the-cameras delegation at the Games, replete with hundreds of cheerleaders and even one of the country's most popular singers, was a big hit with the South Korean media and some of the Games' hottest internet clickbait. The only reports from Pyeongchang as of the last full day of the Games were about the visit of Kim's younger sister and North Korea's nominal head of state to attend the opening ceremony. But even taking into account the North's reluctance to portray South Korea in a positive light, the blackout is a bit mysterious. In the Korea Times, Kim Hyun-bin reports $109 million main stadium to be demolished after Olympics. Korea has spent $13 billion to host the 2018 Pyeongchang Winter Olympics, including $1.5 billion to erect state-of-the-art stadia used for the 17-day sporting event. The average cost to the Pyeongchang Olympics host reaches roughly $10 million an hour. The Pyeongchang Olympic Stadium alone cost $109 million to build. The 35,000-seat stadium will only be used four times during the event, including the closing ceremony on February 25th, but it is scheduled to be demolished after the Winter Games. Pyeongchang, with a population of 40,000, will find it impossible to regularly fill and operate Olympic-grade facilities, the reason why some of the stadia are scheduled to be decommissioned. This week in The Breaker, we brought you an exclusive story about former Vancouver 2010 Olympics CEO John Furlong and his Chinese government-approved translation of his 2011 Patriot Hearts memoir. Furlong's post-Olympic memoir was published last summer in China, the host of the 2022 Winter Games in Beijing, and it was renamed The Sun Finally Shines in Chinese, but it is notable for the same errors of omission and commission as in his 2011 published edition called Patriot Hearts. Just like the English edition, the translation of the Chinese edition includes Furlong's anecdote about leaving his native Ireland and traveling to Canada on an autumn day in 1974 with his wife and their son and daughter, and meeting a customs officer in Edmonton who told him, "Welcome to Canada, please make us better." Errors and omissions in the original English publication inspired journalist Laura Robinson's September 2012 expose in the Georgia Strait newspaper, which was headlined "John Furlong Biography Omits Secret Past in Burns Lake." Robinson revealed that Furlong had already been in Canada. He originally came in 1969 as an 18-year-old to work as a gym teacher at the Immaculata Catholic Elementary School for Aboriginal Children. 43 years later, however, several students accused him of mental, physical, and sexual abuse. Furlong denied all the allegations, and the RCMP did not recommend charges, but none of the allegations has been tested in court. On the day that Robinson's feature was published in 2012, Furlong's co-author, Gary Mason, admitted that Furlong never told him about his time in Burns Lake. Furlong said that he did not include this time in Burns Lake in the book because it was fairly brief and fairly uneventful. The Chinese edition of Patriot Hearts also includes Furlong's controversial deal to gain Russia's votes for Vancouver's 2010 bid and his allegation that South Korean bidders were giving away watches and CD players against IOC's anti-bribery rules. In 2011, the IOC decided not to discipline Furlong. And the gold medal for the best Gangnam-style reinterpretation during the Olympics goes to NRK Sport. That's Norway's public broadcaster and members of Norway's Olympic team for what's called Pyeongchangnam style. 'Cause when we win, 'cause when we win, the fun has just begun. Pyeongchangnam style. I say Pyeongchangnam style. I say Pyeongchangnam style. I say Pyeongchangnam style. I say Pyeongchangnam style. Beautiful and sexy girl. Yes, Pyeongchangnam style. In English, the song starts, "Nobody in the world can ski like us. Nobody in the world can downhill like us. In the Olympics, nobody can party like us. Listen up, we rock the world. Uff da, Norway. Uff da." That's Around the Rim for this week on the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for The Big Deal. This week, we're still on the Pyeongchang 2018 Winter Olympics, and we're talking to Dr. Jules Boykoff, professor of political science at the Pacific University near Portland, Oregon. He is the author of three books about the Olympic Games. His latest is called Power Games, A Political History of the Olympics. It was published in 2016. The 23rd edition of the Olympic Winter Games, Pyeongchang 2018, are now over. These games were known for the Olympic athletes from Russia, the Olympic cheerleaders from North Korea, and the men's Olympic hockey tournament without National Hockey League players. Jules, do you think is Pyeongchang's legacy? What will these games be remembered for?
Well, I think you nicely outlined a number of the sport legacies that we'll often think back on for these Olympics. Off the sports pitch, though, I think the games will probably be most remembered for the fact that it did bring North Korea and South Korea together to march in the opening ceremonies and closing ceremonies, as well as to unite for a women's hockey team. You know, I think that what you've seen between North Korea and South Korea really is meaningful, especially if it flowers into an actual diplomatic scenario. Certainly, it's a whole lot better than having missiles raining down during the Olympics or the threat of disruption hovering from above. So if nothing else, those relations that were started to be built during those Olympics, they are basically the best missile insurance that South Korea could have gotten during the Olympics. I think off the, even beyond that, the political diplomacy field, I think the main legacies, unfortunately, are going to be things we've seen in previous Olympics, such as debt. These games cost twice as much as they were originally slated to cost. A little bit of displacement, not as much as, say, in Rio de Janeiro and elsewhere where we've seen with the Olympics, but that's not to minimize what happened to individuals who were booted out of their homes to make way for Olympic venues. And I think the other legacy is that the doping scandal really just hasn't been fixed yet, and that it's going to continue to be a thorn in the side of the International Olympic Committee until they finally decide to get a handle on it.
Where does the IOC and the Olympics go from here?
The Olympics have really become a sort of morass of controversy. And I think what you're saying basically are the Olympics were sort of a once reliable car that is breaking down before our eyes. But, you know, instead of actually fixing the car, the IOC has essentially affixed a piece of dark tape over the check engine light and just kept on plowing ahead as best they can. And so what lays ahead? There's going to be a lot of sucking up to various cities. Right now you see that a number of cities have put forth at least incipient bids for the 2026 Winter Olympics. That'll be chosen in 2019. And of course, at this stage, as you well know, Bob, there's a lot of cities that put in at the early stage and then withdraw for various reasons, including most recently because of the fact that referendum pop up and then the voters of a city vote it down and say, no, thanks, we don't want that thing. So the Olympics are going to have to change if they want to stick around, it seems. But you're right, they do have a strong money source from a lot of these various corporations. And despite the fact that McDonald's has stepped aside, they have new sponsors like Alibaba as well. So, you know, it's kind of a desperate measure they did when they gave the 2024 Olympics to Paris and 2028 to Los Angeles at the same time, because all the other cities that were bidding on 2024 basically dropped away. And so did that, and they're talking about maybe doing it again. So that's another thing for your listeners to think about, is that you might see the International Olympic Committee try to tee up both the 2026 and 2030 Winter Olympics and allocate them at the same time.
Talk about what comes next for the IOC as they're on their way back to Beijing.
The lead up to the 2008 Summer Olympics in Beijing, people from China who were organizing those Olympics promised that it was going to bring this new heyday of democracy and freedom of speech and that sort of thing. Well, that absolutely has not happened. Liu Xiaobo, the Nobel Prize winner, died in prison there in the wake of the Olympics. I was just meeting with the director of global initiatives from Human Rights Watch last week in New York City. And the way she described it to me was all the problems that were in Beijing in the lead up to 2008 only got worse after the Olympics. And so I think big questions should be raised about the 2022 Games. There have been human rights provisions that have been added now to the host city contract by the International Olympic Committee. Guess what, Bob? They don't apply till 2024. They don't even count toward Beijing. How hard would it be to actually just backtrack it to them? Wouldn't be hard at all. So that's something definitely for people to keep an eye on moving forward. I think the election for 2026 is going to be really interesting, because at this stage you do have a few cities that are pretty much all in, like Sapporo in Japan. There's been some movement in Calgary. I wouldn't say quite they're all in, but there has been some interest. And places like Innsbruck, there's a city in eastern Turkey, or Erzurum, that's has kind of continued to be interested, and then Sion in Switzerland. But again, just like you pointed out, with 2022, there was a big field, but they just started to get dropping to the side. as the actual bidding and the reality of the game started to unfold for the general population. Let's make no mistake, the way we talk about the Olympics today has changed massively. You know, since Vancouver hosted in 2010, I really view that as a pivot point, because a lot of the reporting done in Vancouver by people like you, in fact, Bob, and a lot of the activism done in Vancouver really raised the high profile of a lot of the problems that the Olympics are suffering right now. And so when you go to any one of these potential Olympic cities moving forward, they know a whole lot more than these cities did back in 2010. And so, you know, you're going to see pushback almost automatically. And there's something I've been saying that should be automatically part of the process moving forward, and that is to have referendum attached to each one of the bids moving forward, so that people of the city actually get to weigh in and have some kind of say as to whether they want to host the games. Whether that's going to happen, I'm a little bit doubtful. In fact, cities like Sapporo that I mentioned have said that they don't even intend to have that kind of referendum. They certainly didn't do it in Los Angeles around 2028 as well. But, you know, the flip side of organizing an Olympics in 2028 in Los Angeles with such a long timeline is that you actually create a lot of space for activists to get together and to figure out a plan to fight back against the Olympics. So you have more time to organize, more time to get people on the same page and push back against something that's become increasingly unpopular. I mean, people love the Olympics. They love watching the Olympics on TV, you know, and I watch them too, but nobody really wants to host them in their city anymore, at least not everyday working people from each of these potential bid cities.
And finally, what advice would you give to people in Calgary, in Alberta, as their province, as their city studies whether to make that bid for 2026?
Yeah, I would say look at the facts. I mean, if you want to look at the research on costs, it's pretty unequivocal that the Olympics are not a money-making opportunity for everyday people in the city. If you want to look at the militarization of the public sphere, just look across west to Vancouver and see what happened during those Olympics. It was pretty astonishing. Look what's happening in Pyeongchang. Look what happened in Rio de Janeiro. There's some unequivocal trends that the people of Calgary should be utterly aware of before they decide to cast their lot with the Olympic Games. Far be it for me to tell anybody in Calgary what they should do with their public money, but this is a huge investment that'll change a lot in your city, and I strongly recommend taking a look at the evidence, which has become crystalline clear over the years. And if you do not like what you're seeing in terms of the evidence laying out for the everyday people of the city, then my other recommendation, I suppose, would be to organize early and often, because that is what tends to push back against the Olympics before they're awarded to your city. Once they're awarded to your city, it's pretty tough to get rid of them. Really, there's only been one time when that's happened. That was Denver in 1976. But you can, before the Olympics are allocated to your city, push back and sort of fend off the Olympic machine before it rolls into your town. After all, the International Olympic Committee does look very carefully at public opinion polls when they're deciding who to allocate the games to. And so citizens can get involved. It might seem really difficult against the odds in a lot of ways, because all the money involved on the Olympic side. But if the games haven't yet been awarded to your city, you can still fight back.
That was Jules Boykoff, professor of political science at Pacific University in Oregon and author of Power Games, A Political History of the Olympics. Find out more about his work. Go to his website, julesboykoff.org. That's JulesBoykoff.org. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the Pyeongchang 2018 gold medalists from British Columbia, Summerland bobsledder Justin Cripps, Comox halfpipe skier Cassie Sharp, and big white ski crosser Kelsey Serwa. Thanks for the excitement, and as they say, the athletes always save the games. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Please send us an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Well, that's it for the Breaker.News podcast for February 25th, 2018. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Again, the email is bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until the end of March, you can support The Breaker through Patreon and you will receive a free copy of my ebook, Red Mittens and Red Ink, The Vancouver Olympics. Again, that's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week. I said, your Gangnam Style.